This is Sherm Radio in partnership with Timber Media, podcasters for India Inc.
Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Unabashed Candid Conversations on All Things Talent. In this podcast, we have open, honest and unapologetic conversations about the emergent realities of work, worker and the workplace. I am Neha Pant, part of the Knowledge and Advisory Team at Sherm India. And I have with me Abhijeet Bhadari, who is a coach, talent management advisor and an author. How are you doing today, Abhijeet?
Very well, Neha. I'm just sort of getting enlightened about research that I was reading about. And this is a myth that I had. I somehow thought that a lot of the stuff that Sherm has, I always used to imagine that it's only available for Sherm members or something. There's so much of stuff which is available for anyone to read. It's free. So that was pretty amazing. So I just decided to give it a spin.
Yeah, of course, a lot of our stuff is free. All you have to do is just search for whatever you're looking for.
You have to be free to search it.
Yes, absolutely. That is number one. And the other is that when you search it on Google, you just add SHRM against it and you will get everything that's available in the public domain.
I know, that's just what I did. Yeah,
a lot of research papers, you know, some interesting research insights. So yeah, a lot of stuff is free. So, of course, the members get some exclusive knowledge articles and a lot of other host of other stuff.
But you know, I was trying to find out which generation you belong to, so I was just trying to study that.
Then why do you have to do a search? Ask me. No,
I never would do that, you know, because I just was trying to peg this generation classification vis-a-vis myself. So I was kind of saying that, okay, I am Gen Z, so which means anybody between 8 and 25 is Gen Z. So I kind of say that, okay, that's me. I thought, okay, Neha has to be more than older than me. So yeah, so she has to be millennial or maybe Gen Y, Gen Z, Gen Next, whatever you want to call. So anybody up to 40. So that's a very broad classification, yeah? So then that's millennial. And then I thought that, no, it is equally possible that somebody could be a millennial, but who thinks like a Gen Xer, you know, which is...
Oh, that's me. That is me. That is me. Millennial with a mind of a Gen X.
No, and so I was just, I was in two minds, whether I should say you're a millennial who thinks like a boomer who is between 55 and 75, or those, who are Gen X, between 40 and 55. So then that was, then I thought that maybe I shouldn't talk about
all. Uber is taking it too far away. I am a millennial who thinks like, who could at times think like, a Gen X, but I also think like a Gen Z. So I have a younger sister who ensures that I'm, you know, clued into all the Gen Z lingo. So in that sense, I think I can think like a Gen Z too.
You know, you actually raise an interesting point. I think it is more to do with the mental flexibility of being able to adapt and go beyond the influences one has grown up with. So because I somehow think that, when organizations have all these labels like Gen Z, millennial, and all this, the moment you do that, I think you're doing people a disservice, because when you think about a generation, frankly, a generation is something which has got a shared experience, which means you're born in a certain time, so you've seen similar experiences. So people who have experienced the partition have a certain kind of a worldview, you know. Mm-hmm. And let's say the people who have experienced liberalization, who started their work before that and who've seen the post-liberalization world, that's a different kind of a group altogether, because, you know, with liberalization, the MNCs came up and white-collar talent from India became a global talent pool. The BPOs came up, you know, you suddenly started seeing email. And I think that is why I believe that after that, once the media started to connect people, more than the socio-economic political factor, it is actually the media which shapes a generation, which means the consumption of media is more descriptive of how you are likely to think. So media is a very, very, very powerful shaper of generations. And that's what, I don't know why, you know, I think Sherm should advise organizations to really start looking at their taste in music, the platforms, social platforms, all of that as a better way to understand their employees than, let's say, any other generational description, because everything else is very ageist, you know, both ways. You would either say the person is too young to do this. You know, I've seen in organizations, you don't promote somebody, you say, no, but the person is barely 30. How can you put this person in this? That's not true, because there might be somebody who is that. Of course, when it comes to our own selves, we always think that we should be made the exception to the rule. But it also works the other way around. Sometimes you say that the person is too old to take this on. You know, definition of
absolutely. It's interesting you say that because, you know, when you were talking about being ageist, I was reminded of how when someone younger to you becomes your boss. I think that's where the most dissonance is, right? And how can somebody who's younger to me be my boss, right? So that's not coming from the space of competence or meritocracy, but it is just that entitlement, and which we associate with so-called millennials. But
That's true for somebody older. Think about somebody who is, let's say, in their 50s and has to report to somebody who's in their 30s. I mean, they have a challenge. Because, this whole belief, while everybody, when it comes to their own self, likes to believe that as far as I'm concerned, if I'm better than, somebody who's my superior in age or experience, I should be given that position. But when it comes to others, I think they should really take the same route as I have. So I think that is really a discrepancy that one notices. Because when you see the way the media influence actually can shape the kind of things that you've been exposed to, the language that you're familiar with, the music that you've heard, all of that. I mean, for a generation, which is of a certain age, they were not as exposed to, let us say, the Western music in India. It was always, folk music. If you think about Bollywood has had its music directors who've actually all symbolized a certain kind of a shift in music. So, Naushad had classical music as one of the features. S.D. Burman got into folk music. Then you have his son, R.D. Burman, who brought in the Western influence, which is actually the time people started to listen to Western songs, whether it is rock and roll and all of that, introduced by that. Then there's been techno, electronic, now you kind of begin to see strains of K-pop influence even in Bollywood. You sort of see that. You see Middle East.
Now you are pretty clued in, Abhijit. Right from Naushad to K-pop, not bad.
No. I mean, this is because I have to hang around with, people who are older than me. So, I have to, as a Gen Z, if I have to hang around with millennials, I have to speak their language, right?
No, absolutely. No, but I think, what you're talking about in terms of really understanding, the taste clusters and something that is getting done on the OTT platforms more, to me, it sounds like a great idea, but I'm not sure if organizations are moving away from looking at multi-generational diversity, as one aspect of, diversity and inclusion in the organizations, if we can really, look at this new way that you are suggesting of people's, taste in terms of the kind of media they consume, the kind of music that they listen to, and the so-called taste clusters, as against really being from a particular generation. Because, you could be a Gen X, but you could think like a Gen Y and vice versa, right? So, what have you picked up? Have you seen...
So, I would not...
be toying with this idea?
Yeah, I would not actually use the term Gen X, Gen Y, etc. at all. I would really look at the individual because take a very simple example. If you were to look at the taste in music, so you're talking about many of the, companies like Netflix and Amazon, they actually think about taste clusters, that what kind of films do you listen to watch, the kind of music that you listen to. So I think that if today, organizations were to partner with some of these music streaming platforms, so whether it's a Gaana or JioSaavn or Spotify or whatever, you take your pick, and then actually identify the taste clusters based on music, you will discover, yes, there will be some similarity. People of a certain generation will, enjoy a certain kind of music. So somebody from an older generation might be very familiar with the music of singing style of, say, K.L. Sehgal, Zorabai Ambalewali. This is pretty unlikely that, somebody at a later generation would know about it. But then there have been singers even before that, before Sehgal sort of came in. And then you will see that there is a large overlap when music opened up and became accessible to everybody. So therefore, you'll see somebody like R.D. Burman's appeal spreads right across from, people who've grown up listening to him and those who are discovering R.D. even now, through the remix pattern. And that, I think, is likely to get you far more insights about the kind of things that people want. So your engagement... policies should be shaped by things like that, in as much as if you offer cuisine, which I don't like, it doesn't matter. You can offer 15 different country cuisines, which I don't like because I'm not familiar. But if I'm familiar with that cuisine, I'll experiment with that. I'll try it out and I'll like it and I feel happy. So providing that choice based on the individual is more powerful than using...
Absolutely. Because
even think about the fact that even zodiac types, you have 12 zodiac types, you know, so and therefore if 1.3 billion Indians have to be put in 12 zodiac types, it's going to be very, you know, very, very broad brushed. It doesn't work like
that. You know, in the right in the beginning, you were mentioning, you know, the speech research, right? So there's another one, you know, that Sherm did with, you know, Dr. Vasanti from IIM Bangalore, and this was about 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, in her research, she did mention that in India, people do not identify, you know, generational diversity as much. You know, there is a, there's low level of awareness about that. But when there are conflicts, you know, they do have an intergenerational overtone. So, you know, leaders could identify, you know, that there is, you know, this conflict happening because of generational differences. Right. And she goes on to talk about, you know, these archetypes that exist in Indian organizations. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, it's talking about diversity, especially generational, more from, you know, the Indian lens. And, it's, you know, we know all of these labels that we are aware of, you know, Gen X, Gen Y, millennials and all of these. They all seem to be more of a Western concept, even though our organizations have taken to it. You know, we heard, at least being a millennial, I have heard all the stereotypes of, you know, being entitled and seeking instant gratification, being low on patience, so things like that. So somewhere I think, you know, we have bit into that Western concept, you know, but interestingly, the archetypes she spoke of in this particular, you know, research paper, I thought it was a wonderful way of, you know, dividing so generations.
What are the archetypes that she's talking about?
So the way they exist in India. So she spoke of silver spoon generation, which is something that perhaps I belong to. So metro bread.
I think it's a golden spoon.
Parents in transferable government jobs. Okay. You know, so that was what was defined as a silver spoon generation. Then there was this Gemini twins generation. You know, as per this archetype, first generation entrant into metro and a city, and you know, I can of course relate that with my parents. And you know, the one which is rooted in the past generation, and this was largely from small towns, first time entrant into the workforce, often single earning member in the family. Parental education is usually through high school. So, you know, I do see that those archetypes, you know, make sense. Some of these, you know, Western labels, you know, they are so much a part of our local parlance today. So I really wonder, can we do away with these labels? Is that what you're suggesting, you know, should be way forward? And can we really then look at not using this aspect of D&I at all? Can we do away with at least one? I know gender is, you know, a more crucial one. But I don't know
think about the, just because we have always actually looked at, you know, classifying demographic data when we do research, you know, so we'll ask people their age, we'll ask people their, you know, and I personally think that it is fairly meaningless because there are people who have come from very different socioeconomic backgrounds who have totally different worldviews and needs. And therefore, asking people for their tastes is a far bigger predictor of what you will discover about them. So I think from a time when HR is all about one size fits all, you know, or maybe three sizes fit all, you actually should be thinking about one size fits one person. And I think that's the transition that we should be seeing in the workplace. I hope, you know.
Wow, that's so cool. One size fits one person. And with billions of people in our country, I don't know how many sizes we are going to discover.
Yeah, so that's what the workplace is all about. Why should people give up their individuality to be in the workplace? And I think that's the shift we will see. So, of course, we'll talk more about it in the coming episode. So once we have more than the two of us listening to this podcast, then we'll get some questions and emails. So
I can assure you there are more.
If there are, then I would really like to know what they thought about this whole concept of taste clusters as a way of, studying employees.
Absolutely. On that note, I'm a bounce, Abhijit. Now, if you're wondering what that is, you should definitely Google it up. There's been a very funny internet meme on this, and this happens to be, millennial lingo. So, that's what's defining, one generation from the other, at least, when it comes to language. On that note, thank you so much, for a wonderful conversation once again. For all the listeners, thank you for tuning in. And if you'd like to reach us, do send us an email on shermindia@sherm.org. You can follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you've heard us before, then you know where to reach Abhijit. But if you're hearing us for the first time, Abhijit, once more, do you want to tell them where they can reach you?
You can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn at Abhijit Bhaduri, ABHIJITBHADURI. If you have a question, would love to hear from you. You can email me at abhijitbhaduri@live.com, ABHIJITBHADURI, @LIVE, as in live television, live.com. And also on my website, abhijitbhaduri.com. So it's pretty straightforward. You know my name, you can find me. So Neha, thank you very much for having me, and look forward to hearing from all our listeners.
Perfect. Yes. So do tell us if you're enjoying listening to these episodes, and we will catch you again for another candid conversation. Until next time, stay unabashed. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
This is Sherm Radio in partnership with Timber Media, podcasters for India, Inc.